welcome Robert Brookman to the show. And you spoke in your presentation today that was is all about the issue of urban sprawl. I was particularly interested in the relationship and the arguments you set up about housing affordability in relation to urban sprawl. Could you tell us a little bit about that and what your views are?
Sure. This has been a big debate for many years because land prices are very much affected by everything that happens in the economy and in the society. So it's hard to separate out the cost of land, what the factors are that drive it up. But I think what recent studies have shown, and particularly some studies like Wendell Cox, an American free market advocate, has taken some studies that have shown pretty clearly that the price increases seem to be mostly related to land, not just in Australia, but in all the affluent countries of the world. And it does appear that regulation is one of the biggest components of that rise. So you see that land prices have gone up most dramatically in places like Sydney or Melbourne in Australia, in cities in Northern Europe, and in North America, those cities like Portland, Oregon, Los Angeles, Vancouver, Toronto, that have the most strict controls.
Somebody asked a question today about the cities that you mentioned. They are some of the most livable cities in the world, and what the relationship between livability and affordability might be as well.
Well, I think that that's chicken and egg situation, that as people become more affluent, they want more controls. So if you look at places like San Francisco, which, for example, which has been gentrifying in the central area for decades and decades, every time the population becomes more affluent, it wants more control, it wants to avoid any changes to the built environment. However, that always has a negative effect on other people because it's pushing out all of the poor minority residents of San Francisco. They're going elsewhere to the Bay Area, and those controls, which preserve the amenity for people who currently live in San Francisco, are forcing people all the way out into the Central Valley of California, which in any kind of planning analysis has got to be a very bad thing.
Are you an advocate of urban sprawl, or is it more about pushing out further out from the city centre, or is it more just about deregulation of planning controls?
Neither. I'm not either in favor of sprawl or against it, just as I'm not in favor of living in central cities or against it. My interest is in what's happened historically, what have the policies been, who has it benefited, and then who has suffered by them. And I think that's the kind of analysis that needs to be done on every kind of policy, and it just struck me that the anti-sprawl policies were not being looked at that way. It was taken for granted that the sprawl was bad, that need to be stopped, but I think that the whole other side of the issue, how sprawl benefited people and what the negative consequences of trying to stop it are, have not been explored, and that's what I'm doing.
At the start of your talk, you said that aesthetic considerations are what have the anti-sprawl bodies have been using.
What I was trying to say was that although a lot of people have differing reasons for disliking sprawl, and they're very often social or economic or environmental, I think that it's pretty clear that the emotional mainspring of the anti-sprawl campaign has always been aesthetic. As to what the implications would be if, for example, we took away all controls, that's an academic question because there are many more controls than there ever have been. The cities that we most like from the 19th century were done without any public planning whatever. So I think it's obvious that planning or lack of planning can produce things that are liked or disliked by people at one time or another, so that I don't think that there's necessarily any particular connection there. I think what you can say is that the things that were most criticized in any generation are almost always reevaluated and very often become the most treasured things of the next. So I think that aesthetics are very important and increasingly important as people become more affluent, but they are some of the trickiest things to evaluate because not only do they vary from person to person, but they're going to vary dramatically for the same person across any period of time.
What do you say, Robert, to the kind of environmental arguments against urban sprawl about this idea of a sort of ecological footprints and us kind of increasing resources by these issues of public transport and infrastructure and development that extends further and further out from the city centre?
Well, that's a lot of things all at once. Generally, I think that the people who have claimed that that the crisis is upon us. This is a long history. It certainly goes back to Thomas Malthus in the 18th century. Virtually every one of these crisis scenarios has always been proved wrong, that the problem with them is they assume a steady state and that nothing will change. What always changes is that human ingenuity has solved the problem and then something else becomes a crisis. So I think that the current environmental crisis that is claimed would happen if there was just unlimited sprawl, I think is misguided. I don't think there's any particular reason why, if everyone lived at very low densities the world over, that it would necessarily be any less environmentally friendly than living in big cities, which how can anyone argue that living in a very dense city that's almost entirely paved over, that depends on massive amounts of energy from someplace else in the world, I don't see that as necessarily inherently sustainable, just as I don't see that living at very low density is necessarily unsustainable.
You can read about your views in your book, which is called?
The book is Sprawl, A Compact History. It's published by University of Chicago Press in 2005 and is just out in paperback.